Recording on here. Okay. So, hi everybody, and welcome to the session today. So, as usual, I want to have some sharing about what you've been working on, specifically around two areas, which is your marketing action plans and getting unstuck. Now, you know, I don't know how many times you've done the getting unstuck exercise. I recommend it a few times between last time and this time. And most of you are working towards or in or have created a marketing action plan in some area. Some people are just developing it. Some people are rock and rolling, like Nancy and Oliver and Carol and Sarah, et cetera, and others. So I'd just like you to share what's, not for me so much, but for the group to show, to let us know what's working, what's not working, what you're dealing with, et cetera. So who would like to go first? And make sure to unmute yourself if you're going to talk.
It's Oliver.
Hey, Oliver.
Hey, just talked to you, Robert. And this has been a struggle for me, to be very honest. And I'm a sales guy. I've been in sales all my life. I've made more cold calls than anybody, than everybody combined would probably ever make in their lifetimes, and got burned out and got tired of it and, you know, all the crap. So anyway, I had a conversation with Robert yesterday, and I've been struggling, trying to get off my butt and get moving and reaching out to people. And I've been talking to people about referrals. And I found that what I was doing really wasn't good enough. You can't just ask somebody for a referral and hope that all of a sudden, you know, you're going to have a ton of referrals. And the way Robert put it yesterday was, gee, you know, who do you know that needs help with sales? And he said, basically, the person you're talking to, his brain goes into overload and they shut down and it's not good enough. So you have to be way more specific and help them. And you almost have to say, do you know such and such at such and such a company? And would you introduce me? Not quite as blunt as that, but you really have to help them some more. So anyway, a little positive. When I got off the phone with Robert yesterday, I thought, you know, I've been meaning to call this previous client for a long time. And I haven't done it, so let me call him. So called, left a voicemail, and about 10 minutes later, he called me back. And we talked for maybe an hour. He runs a company in the Pacific Northwest. They sell air conditioning components and so forth. And it looks like I'm going to get a couple of his managers to coach for the next year. I mean, I don't have to check yet, but it looks pretty good. So I thought, you know what? It's a question of doing it. Just... And you're going to try it, and it doesn't work, and you look at it, and you figure out, okay, what do I need to do better? You know, where's the disconnect? And I've written and rewritten my action plan a bazillion times. And the plan's great, but really the bottom line is we only have control. We have no control over the amount of business we get. Our customers decide whether they're going to work with us or not. But we do have control over our activities, which is reaching out to people, whether it's email or text or voicemail or phone or whatever. And we do have a lot of control over how we position it, how we act, and how we behave. And, you know, all this stuff I've known for 100 years. But trying it again, you go, okay, dummy, you know how to do this stuff. Just do it. And it's hard. It's really hard to get started. But once you get started, it seems like it works. So that's my little tale of woe and good news, too.
So, okay. Oliver, the question is it hard or is it the thinking that makes it hard?
Oh, it's the thinking. It's not hard at all once you do it. But,
we had a conversation. And it happened to be good timing at the right time, and there you got a client.
Yeah, Yeah, well, my thought was, why would they help me? Why would somebody I haven't talked to for several years want to go out of their way and go in their database and send me stuff? Why would they want to do that?
Well, why wouldn't they want to do it?
Well, yeah, that's the real thing. So you never know until you ask. And I'm finding that people, and we live in a pretty tough world where, you know, all sorts of bad stuff going on all the time and what have you. And yet, the vast majority of people want to help. So, you know, find out the easy way or the hard way. But certainly unless you try and unless you reach out to people, nothing's going to happen.
So I've got to remind you, Oliver, you've connected with a guy.
Mm-hmm.
This is an interesting little story. He's a guy that's about to have prostate surgery, so he's going to be on his back for a couple weeks. And he says, hey, on my back, I have nothing to do. I'll work through my list of 100 contacts and see if I can connect with you. That one guy could provide you all the work you need for next year, potentially.
This is true, but I'm not even thinking about it.
On my back, why not help Oliver? I mean, who knows? Who would guess that would happen?
Yeah, because he's a crazy Irishman, and he might come burn down my house if I don't help him. No, kidding. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah, people are willing to help. And I guess the other thing is you can't sound needy. You can't sound like, oh, you owe me, or, gee, I really need the business, or whatever. You just have to, it has to be matter of fact and say, look, this is what I'm doing. I'm trying to reach people. I know that you can help. Are you willing to do it? And how can I help you do it?
Yeah. And the good thing is, you know, you're in a lucky position in that you have a lot of those past contacts.
That's because I'm old.
Yes, well.
You can't go through this life for a lot of years without picking up somebody along the way.
That's right. So, look, you're in a good place. You're in a good place.
Yeah.
A place where you don't need to get a lot of business right now to get by. You're okay, which is sometimes good and bad, as we talked about. We talked about motivation.
Yeah.
We also had a really good conversation about price and what you're worth, which we won't go into right now, but other people might have that as well. So we covered a lot of stuff, and you know, I love it when you have a call and then pow, something happens. That's pretty exciting. That's great.
Yeah, it was. And you know, I had a price set in my mind, which I think for this guy is too low, so I didn't even touch on price. And he didn't even touch on price. So he told me exactly what he was looking for, where he wants to go, and what he wants to do with them, and so forth. So you can make it happen.
Well, in our conversation, we increased his price about 2.5 times.
This is true.
I was thinking about $1,000 a month, and I had him look at the time it takes. Look at what's the real time you put into it.
Yeah.
And it's hard to imagine not charging about $2,500 minimum for a client.
Yeah.
So you want to keep looking at that before you say, because you're a good friend, I'll just charge you X, you know.
Yeah, no, I did look at some of the numbers again, and what I think realistically their increase in sales and profits would be, and I'm thinking, geez, this isn't even 1% that I'm looking for. You know, it's
yeah.
So, you know, it puts it into focus.
Yeah, we could have a whole conversation about that, but yeah. You know, what we give as benefit to the client. You know, for someone, for instance, like Sarah Jane. Sarah Jane goes in and helps them put in I can't remember it again, Sarah Jane.
Abrasive.
Abrasive, not abusive, yes. The abusive word keeps coming up. So that abrasive leader stays with the company. They don't have to hire somebody else. He's more productive. That could be worth hundreds of thousands or more. And her fee is not low, but it's low compared to the benefit.
It's been my experience that whenever I'm speaking with an organization, whether it's for coaching an abrasive leader or coaching a successful leader, when I have communicated effectively and or they have a need, they never even ask me about price. They just say, send us an invoice or whatever, because price is completely irrelevant.
Yes. Maybe you should surprise them one day with a $50,000 bill and see if, what they think of that.
There are people in my field who coach at $250,000 an hour.
What?
Yes, you heard me correctly.
$250,000 an hour?
That's correct. That's correct. Now, I think that's obscene, but what I charge, the reason why I'm saying that to you is because what I charge is on the low end.
Yeah, well, that's something to think about. But first, you got to get some clients. But
hello.
You know, that's kind of mind-boggling, isn't it?
Yes, it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing to me that anybody would charge that much, and it's embarrassing to me that anybody, including a billionaire such as Donald Trump, would even pay that much. It's just embarrassing.
Yes. Yeah, that's just sort of in an area I'm not too familiar with. But I've seen people charge... you know, I have a client. His name is Mark Thompson. And every client Mark gets, he gets $100,000. So Mark sells has a whole system for developing the strategy and getting implemented in a company. And he only works with top CEOs. So it's worth it to them, you know, by many, many, many factors. So you just have to translate that to you. I mean, I had a conversation with Sarah yesterday as well about price. You know, when we're having conversations about price, that's a good place to be, because it's like she's about to get a client, but what can I charge? And I think we at least doubled the price, and she realized even that was kind of low. So we'll see what happens. Did you reach her yet, by the way, Sarah? You're on mute. I just wondered if she...
We talked this morning. So we're having a face-to-face next week.
Okay, good. Yeah, we walked her through the whole process. And was it a good conversation?
Yeah, it was great. So we're meeting tomorrow, and I followed your advice about the selling conversation. So then we talked about what the organization needs. And yeah, we're having a face-to-face meeting next week.
Great. It's an interesting, really interesting story. Well, she put it on her the action support system, but it's the director. Is it the director of a woman's shelter? And a little while ago, a woman brought in, you know, she'd been abused by her husband, and brought in more than one child. Maybe one of the child was on the autism spectrum. And the counselors didn't know what to do. They didn't know. And then the woman was having problems. And so it was like, well, we need to know what to do. And so there was a real need there. So it's a real sensitive kind of thing. It's an interesting kind of sale, a very different kind of thing. But she sent out her new website, and she got an immediate response from this person. So, yay.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Okay, who else would like to share something about what you're working with, struggling with? Nancy, go ahead. Unmute yourself.
Well, one thing I wanted to say is Oliver said something about not wanting to seem needy. And that is one of the things that I'm really noticing. Like, I've always had that conversation about not wanting to seem needy. And in my field right now, in my category, there has been a decrease in business, and everybody, all my competitors, business is down. And so sometimes my clients will say, how are things going? Like that. And it really pushes the button, you know, like I don't, fine, they're fine. And I've gotten to a point where I can actually honestly say, oh, you know what, things are good. And it's because really a lot because of this program. Thank you, Robert, and all of you. Because I feel like I'm in action. And before I started doing this, I just didn't know what to do. And now I feel like I'm just creating. And it feels so much better to be creating that I just feel easy. And so I've had lots of interesting conversations where yesterday somebody referred someone to me, and she wanted to know about my capabilities. I don't know how I did in that conversation. You know, it was like that getting to first base conversation. And then I later looked up what she did. I didn't know. I couldn't understand her name on the phone when she left her message. And so I couldn't look her up ahead of time. And turns out she's a brand strategist. So it probably mattered how I answered my questions. And I don't know how I did, because I was probably not quite as clear as a bell as I wish I had been. But even so, I felt great about the conversation. I felt like I knew what to say about myself. And I've been creating new things I can do and getting referrals from them. So it's just really been easy. And that
Are you going to forward her your document about how to hire a...
That's where I'm really stuck, is that I have somebody who manages my website for me a little bit, because I don't know how to do that. And I keep asking them to show me how, and they keep saying, oh, how about Monday? And then not getting back to me. So well, I just
send it as an attachment.
I will do that. That's a great idea. Someone else asked me for the link, though, and I don't want to look, so I've got that conversation. Like, I don't want to look like I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah. I don't have it up. Let me just send you as an attachment. Don't make it.
I'll do that. Thank you. So that's where I'm stuck. It's like, I just want to know how to manage my website so that I don't have to rely on someone else to do that. I'm having fun. So that all said, I'll tell you, until I got on this phone call, I was feeling really embarrassed that I haven't done very much. I feel like I'm behind, and I am. But that's okay, because I can see that my attitude is there and I'm moving forward. So it feels really good.
Well, you've actually been doing quite a lot. You've been writing some articles. You did that 5-page piece on how to select a moderator. You've been reaching out some, but I've been sort of egging you on to keep at that.
I'm having trouble with a couple things, but I am doing some things, so... it feels really good, though. I just feel good, and that is way better than not feeling good.
Yeah.
And I'm working, which is really good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All of that is nice.
Yeah.
You know, however, Nancy, you really know you're on track when you're feeling bad, and you just get past it really quickly.
Yeah.
That's part of the use of the unstuck work. It's like, we have a thought related to a circumstance that triggers us.
Yeah.
X person just won't return our damn call. Whatever. That sets up an association, and God knows where it can go. We got to come back to who we are right now. We're just here. We're okay. We're all right. It's not necessarily reflection on you whatsoever.
Yeah.
Usually people don't get back to you because they're crazy busy. Maybe they just don't need you right now. And maybe it's usually never personal. So an important thing to remember, you know, you have disappointing things happen all the time. Me too, all the time. The thing is, how long do we get stuck in the cycle of disappointment?
Right.
Because the longer we're in that, the longer we can't take any effective action, right? Mm-hmm. But now you're in an upward spiral, at least for today.
At least for today. I haven't felt in a downward spiral until I start feeling like I have to confess. So one other thing that was kind of cool is somebody called me to try to sell me some marketing services, YP, you know, the Yellow Pages transformation. And I said to the guy, well, let me tell you who my ideal customer is, and then you tell me if you think you can help me. And it was great to be able to have that conversation and listen to what he could offer and have a real conversation. And then he agreed that they were probably not the best for me. So we had a great conversation and learned from each other. And he's not going to call me back and try to convince me.
Good. Yeah, B2B is not good for Yellow Pages.
Mm-mm.
Hardly ever.
Well, they don't just do Yellow Pages anymore, but that's a long story.
You know, it's funny. I looked at my Yellow Pages the other day and realized we haven't gotten a new Yellow Pages since 2011.
They don't publish that anymore. They're called YP now.
They're not putting out Yellow Page books anymore. And I didn't even notice it. It was like, holy cow, there's another thing of the internet. However, if you want to look somebody up, I guess people just use directory assistance these days. because it's hard to find white pages online. I can't do it. Mm-hmm. Maybe I just don't know where to go. Okay, anyway.
It's called Super Pages.
Super Pages. Okay. God, I spent half an hour the other day trying to look somebody up, and I went in this circle, you know? Anyway, not a big deal. Okay, so who else would like to share what you're going through? And if you don't have anything to share, I have a lot of other material that I want to talk about today. So let's get into that, okay? So I'm not going to share the screen because I don't want you to pay attention to this. I've created a document which I'm going to send you immediately after the session, but I'm going to read this and talk about it. So this is going to be based on your next homework for the next couple of weeks, but it's called Making a Strong Case for Your Business. So every time you communicate about your business, you want to make a strong case for the value that you offer. So you might have a long conversation, might be a short email, an article, a pitch to sign up for your email newsletter, a phone message, anything where you're communicating about your business. As I've said, marketing is 100% communication, but we're going to go deeper into that today. So a strong case includes the following elements, although you don't necessarily need to use these every time. So a clear articulation of who your clients are, some of these we've covered before, and what they might be missing. A clear articulation of your bottom line ultimate outcome. This is what you get when you work with me. Several clear benefits to what you're offering. Proof that what you're offering is beneficial. Stories or examples of client success. Call to action for the next step. So all of those are pretty straightforward. However, we're going to go into a deeper dimension, backing up some of your claims with research or outside proof of what you do. And we call this market-based claims. So if you have a very beneficial service, can you refer to research to back up what you claim is beneficial or what is an unknown problem? For instance, there's an article I'll reference here, and it's on the ICF site, which is the Institute of International Coach Federation. And what that does is give a lot of evidence from studies of how effective coaching is and how more people reach their goals with coaching and do this, this, and this, and this. So oftentimes we're trying to say, well, coaching is really good because it helps you with blah, blah, blah. But if we go outside and look at what other people have said, we can start giving some statistics. Now I don't have those at my fingertips right now, but did you know that coaches have been proven on the whole to increase performance by 37% or whatever it is? Those kinds of things that are not data about your business, but about what has been discovered generally can be very, very persuasive. But usually we don't tap into those things. When I ask people, well, how are you unique or how are you special or what's the difference you make, often people don't have a very good answer. So there's an article by somebody called Dan McInnes. Actually, it's a woman, Danielle McInnes, points out that in a survey of 149 small business owners, 74% don't have a written marketing plan. Now, I thought that was a fascinating statistic. Now, unfortunately, I found this on Google, and then I could only see this much of her page, and her page wouldn't scroll. So I do know that 100% of people that go to a website that doesn't work, they leave the page. That could be used in another way. But anyway, so 74% don't have a written plan. So what if you did a little more research and found that people didn't have a plan, or if you also knew that 89% of businesses who do have a plan make 76% more income than other similar businesses with a plan? With a little searching, you can find some correlations there. So people go, well, I don't know if I need a plan. I mean, I'm going okay. And you say, well, it's proven that people with a plan make more money. Here's some data. You go, oh, wow, yeah. And, you know, you build an argument around that. You don't want to make up stuff, of course. But data from the outside can really be persuasive. So sometimes that data is hard to come by. Some of it's sketchy, but much of it can be found online with smart Google searches and a little persistence. I look up a lot of stuff on Google. I'm always looking for proof, examples, articles. Some of you have been on a call with me where I said, well, what books have been written about this? And I use Amazon as a search engine. So I go to Amazon and say, well, what's the most important book about leadership or this or that? What are some statistics that they have about that? You read the comments and you go, oh, I can pull a lot of information from that book, and you buy the book. And that can be
what about quotes by famous people?
Yeah. I mean, sometimes that's good. The only problem with quotes from famous people, it can be so universal and so big, which is fine to an extent, but anybody could use those quotes. It's not quite like research.
Okay.
So I'm saying everything can help, and I'm not saying it's just this one thing. This is a component that a lot of people don't use. So here's what you want to know, or, you know, to find this out so you can use this in your marketing. What proof, research, et cetera, is available about the effectiveness of your kind of service? Not your specific service, but your kind of service. What kind of problems arise when clients don't do such a thing, like 74% of people not having a marketing plan, or people that don't brush their teeth, you know, they get cavities, they lose their teeth. I mean, we see this all over the place, but we don't realize it and we don't use it ourselves. I thought Sarah Jane's article about abusive leaders was good in that she said, here's all the things that you do to try to get the abusive leader to change, but none of them work. And it's like, you look at that and that's building proof. And you say, well, we have a proprietary system called influence to, what is it?
Win squared.
Okay. And, you know, she makes a case for, I have the proprietary system that can change abusive leaders. That's a valuable tool. So the more proof you can put towards that, the more persuasive it is. Another one is, who else is doing what you're doing? Perhaps someone that's more advanced in your field, that's a recognized expert and or author. What were their results? Perhaps they've done research you could draw from. I do that stuff all the time. What are my competitors doing? What are things that they're using to prove the efficacy of their work? That kind of stuff. What research is available about a certain approach that you offer in your business? So, for instance, like someone like Sharon, if you're doing experiential learning, there's an article that I've referenced here, cites some interesting reasons why experiential learning works. And they have about, I think it's 8 reasons. Here's why it works. Instead of saying, well, we do experiential learning, that's really wonderful, but they're thinking, so what? So bring in that evidence. What data, research, studies absolutely proves your approach works and shows definitively what doesn't work as well. And I'm also going to include an article. This is how this all started. This is sort of a new kind of expansion on what I've talked about in terms of messaging. And a lot of this was stimulated by a guy named Chet Holmes, who was a really brilliant systematizer for selling and marketing and business. And he has this concept called the core story. And the core story is built on this market-based evidence, market-based proof. And so I'm going to give you an article that they put together that talks about that. So it covers some important concepts regarding the market-based marketing. So
So when we come up with claims, should they then be included in our HEOB letters?
It could be, yes. Absolutely.
That needs to be updated then.
Everything needs to be updated every day, it seems. Yes. Yeah. So it's, you know, it depends on what you do, of course. I think it makes it really is, it's individually, you know, for instance, in Nancy's case, all her customers already understand what focus group moderators do and that they need focus group and they need the data. But if she dug a little bit deeper, she might find out some interesting other statistics about a certain ways to do it. So, you know, and some of that came out in her article. She emphasized that our psychological orientation is valuable because of this, this, and this. Now, there may or may not be data about that, Nancy, but there might be that if maybe that somebody did a study of focus group moderators and found that the ones that had the psychological background got 28% better blah, blah, blah from it. I don't know. Some of this would be pretty hard to find or might not be there at all. Who knows? But it's like I'm always asking, who knows what? Who has proven something? Because I don't want to just say, well, this, you know, I know testimonials work. I know explaining how it works work. I know talking about the structure works. I know talking about the benefits work. But I love proof. I mean, you know, we should be in love with proof. How can we prove it? And outside proof is very, very powerful. So let's see. Whatever you do, you must make a solid case, a strong case, an airtight case for your services. And you want to bring everything to bear to accomplish that. So this takes facts, proof, ideas, insight, whatever is needed. So here's an example I could use. I invented the game of marketing ball. It's probably the only totally original thing I've come up with. And I got the idea when I was meeting with a client several years ago, and I said, well, let's see, you seem to be at first base. You need to get to second base. He says, what's first base? And I made it up as I went. And I got, yeah, this is exactly how it works. And then I, you know, the next day I sketched it out on a piece of paper on my computer and I refined it and I started using it. So, but that's just came out of my insight of marketing. So how could I build evidence for that? So, but if I could prove that using a game in a business scenario was more effective, it would get more attention. It would have more credibility. It would be more persuasive. So all the relative, so I found this, where did I find this? I can't remember. Oh, it was an article on using games. Actually, I don't have the link in here. I'll put that in. Using games. So here's the quote. Although relatively few organizations have adopted games as part of their training curriculum to this point, the research shows unequivocally, don't you love that word, unequivocally? In other words, it's settled. There's no question. The benefits of game-based learning. A meta-analysis by the UC Denver Business School concluded that those who played learning games ended up with 11% higher factual knowledge, 14% higher skill-based knowledge, and 9% higher retention rate than those who used other methods. So that's something that Sharon could use for her horse work in talking about experiential learning. So do those percentages exactly apply to her work? Not necessarily, but it builds a solid case that experiential learning makes it stick, makes a difference. Because she can say, we know, we've seen it, we've done all this, and people are still often suspect. So dig into the research about experiential learning, and it can be persuasive. So that's how that information can make marketing ball more credible. Now, when I thought of that, I thought, well, that's something I can add to my website, add to my marketing. So we also have, you know, in terms of proof, case studies from you guys. So Carol Bombardier sent a, by the way, is Carol on the call now? I don't know.
I am here. Yes.
Carol's in the call, and Lynn's there, and Sharon's there, and I don't think Roberta's here. Okay, maybe she said she wasn't coming and I forgot. Okay, so Carol sent a promotional email to her list for her Mindful Body workshop. Then she followed it up with a few emails giving more reasons why the workshop might be beneficial, talking about very specific things that would be addressed in the workshop and why they are effective. Now, you didn't use evidence-based scientific reports there, but you had some very persuasive arguments. You know, you're looking for, I can't remember what it was off the top of my head, but in one of those more recent letters, you talked about the importance of, do you remember what it was, Carol?
Commitment, you know, just doing it now, and there's never a good time.
Yeah.
That was the last one.
Yeah, but did you know the University of Michigan study with 390,000 sophomores proved that when people made a commitment and wrote it down, that they're blah, 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 et cetera. You know, see what I'm saying? You could find that information. So it's sort of like when I'm saying, well, you know, this is true, this is true, this is true. Well, who else said that? Could something, you know, be useful in your persuasiveness? But also, I want to mention that you've got to watch about this because, you know, some people have quoted this forever, and some people quote inaccurate information. For instance, there is something almost everybody has heard, that communication is only 7% verbal and the other 93% is nonverbal. It is totally, absolutely bullshit. It is not true. So it shows that people don't do very good research. It's they just heard it somewhere and they quote it. Find the original research. You know, what really happened? So it was based on something that, you know, and they just transferred it to that. If you do something like that, someone might know that, and then it hurts your credibility. So you don't want to hurt your credibility. Have real facts, real studies, real whatever. Okay? So you get the idea how you could use that kind of thing to make a more persuasive argument. So Sarah Taylor launched her new website to those on her small list. She had a lot of powerful information on the site that builds a strong case. And she's been looking at that, you know, what X number of percentage, or 1 in 68 Canadians will show up on the autism scale. That's an interesting fact. So you think, if I'm a really big company with X 100,000 people or 10,000 people, I probably have 34, 50, 60, and maybe 100 people that are on the autism scale. That's an issue I didn't even know about. So it makes you think, I've got to find out more about, because there is a requirement in Canada that accommodations be made for people that are on the autism scale. So again, you're building your arguments, and so she can use that data to help people be more interested. Nancy Clift wrote a 5-page marketing piece, which we've mentioned, How to Hire a Focus Group Moderator. The information in the piece makes a powerful argument for the qualities of such a moderator. Now she's getting more requests to bid on projects. Now, I don't know if that's directly related to that, Nancy, but I predict that in the future, it will make a big difference to you. Roberta Ryan was a facilitator at a conference, put up her new website, did a tabletop expo, and is out there making more connections and arranging for presentations. So every time she does one of those activities, she's making an argument for her service and making a case. So there's kind of two things here. Number one is, do I get this concept of I need to make a solid case for my business? And many, many cases that we're making are weak. You could punch holes in them. They're just not very persuasive. That's number one. Number two is, how can we make those arguments even deeper with evidence-based research? Anyway, so let's see. A couple other things. You might say marketing consists of two main things. The two V's. Visibility and value. Visibility is finding the best way to get you and your message out there to your ideal audience. Value is the content of your messages. If you work on improving both, you start to get traction. So the vehicles can be web content, blog and e-zine, articles posted on LinkedIn, articles on other websites, special handouts to clients, presentations, webinars, teleclasses. Anytime you're writing anything, ask yourself, can I find more evidence? And build a case on that. It takes persistence, imagination, and trying a lot of things over time. That's the bad news. Sorry. But the good news is, you know, one of the biggest pieces of good news in business that ever happened? It's called Google. I call Google the know-it-all oracle. I mean, you can find anything there. You couldn't do that before. Once I had a guy that I wanted to do a partnering of some stuff, and I said, well, we got to find out if that particular market needs this. And we met at the library and we started to do research. This was pre-internet years ago. This is a guy who I'm still doing. I'm in a brainstorming group with him many years later. And one day David called me and said, I'm just not going to do this. I don't want to do that kind of research. Now we have Google. We can find all this kind of stuff out fast. So anyway.
And Wikipedia.
Absolutely Wikipedia. Yeah. Wikipedia, Google, Amazon, everywhere. YouTube, for God's sake. You can find out great things on how to do things in YouTube. Everything. You want to take your iPod apart? Go to YouTube. It's amazing. So I know a guy named Jeff Walker who has made $20 million in his business over the last 10 years or so. He teaches a very good system, perhaps the best, most proven, most effective system for online marketing. If you want to do online marketing, he's the guy. And I'm going to his workshop in 2 weeks in Phoenix. I bought his program years ago, and because of that, I get to go to a 3-day workshop for free, which is pretty exciting. So he's helped clients make over $500 million in new sales through his system. And he hasn't even counted how my results, because it's really helped me. It helped me fill my groups using some of his techniques. So in an interview with him, recently, he said it's about baby steps and moving towards your goal. First, having the guts to even have that goal and then steadily moving towards it. I sent my first email out to 19 email addresses. That was less than me. I had 50 to start with. And I just kept on grinding it out. Then I started getting one new subscriber a day and then three new ones a day. So I just kept on taking those baby steps. I think a big part of it is the ability to delay gratification, being willing to put in the work in now, knowing it's not going to pay off immediately. And just as a side note, I've now written more than 10,000 email broadcasts. So there's this magic 10,000 numbers. Anyone read Malcolm Gladwell's Outliers book? It was a thing that's been put in the media a lot. The idea that you really get to that place of incredible competence and effectiveness when you've put in 10,000 hours. Now, some of you are saying it's too late in my life to put in another 10,000 hours, obviously, but you put in a lot of time anyway. So there's that magic number. So that's why, you know, when you've put in that time, whether it's, you know, hundreds or thousands, it makes the difference. We can't just expect, pow, it's just going to happen. But with some of these concepts, you can make it happen a lot faster. It's like, have I shared with you my secret weapon for getting cards when you do a presentation? Put up your hand if I've told you that. Leanne has. Who else? We've lost some people on this call, but anyway. When you're giving a presentation, I'll talk about it. But that one little technique, and so many of the techniques I've taught give you incredible leverage over the previous technique. If you use a certain technique to get cards, the technique that almost everybody uses or doesn't use at all, you'll get 20% of the cards from the audience. If you use my technique, you almost always get 80% of cards from the audience. So by simply saying and doing a few different things that take no effort, no extra time, doesn't cost anything, you can get 8 times the result. And there's so many little things like that can multiply your effectiveness. So,
are you going to tell us your technique?
You want to know it?
Yes.
I wanted you to beg me for it before I told you.
Robert, you haven't lost anyone on this call. I'm not sure why you thought that, but everybody's still here.
Okay. You've been so quiet, and I've been talking so.
But what is the technique?
Okay, here's what it is. At the end of the talk, this is what people usually do. They say, I have a report, and if you'd like to get that report, at the end of the talk, just give me your card, and I'll give you the report. That will get you 20% of the cards. Most people don't say anything. They say, if you ever need my services, just call me, or something inane like that. However, if you do it this way, you say, I have a report that sort of summarizes a lot of the things we talked about in the talk today. You have a physical copy. Now, I don't have a colored copy. And you hold it up like this. And they see the report, physical, tangible. And then you say these magic words, who wants a copy? And then you have people raise their hands. Raising the hands is the secret. And it's based on the law of consistency. This is scientific stuff. The law of consistency says if someone says they will do something, they will usually do it. So when you say, who wants a copy? They say, I want a copy. Then you say, right now, please pull out your business card right now, check that the email is current, and pass your cards in right now, and I'll send you a copy. When I did a talk at ICF, I got 250 cards in 5 minutes. We emailed all those people. We added people to the list. And 7 of those people ended up in my first mastery program, netting me $70,000. So that's powerful. Techniques are powerful. And this is a powerful technique as well. It's how to prove something that's third party. And it's credible. Do you ever notice on the news when someone is talking about a new book or something, and or you see a news story about this book, and the kind of books that journalists love are books that are based on scientific proof. Why do you think they like that? Come on, you got to think. Why do you think they like books based on scientific proof? Or you see news items. You know, they just proved that, people that are, I've seen this one. This is based on research. People that are tall are offered jobs 27% more than people that are short. I don't know the percentage, but the basics are true. I could look that up. Now, why do they report that in the news, and why do books that have that kind of evidence get a lot of attention? See, that you don't know that gives you a disadvantage. Come on, somebody try, at least guess.
It seems more credible.
But yeah, it's more credible. So what's in it for the journalist? What does the journalist always want to report?
Facts.
They want to report facts. They don't want to make up BS. So if they have a book, well, this is a really nice book. It's all about how, contacting the astral plane will increase your income. Those books are hard to get publicity for because what's it really based on? But if they say, well, this book has proven that this activity done in this way increases your income by this, and they've done a lot of studies, that gets news because science is believable. Now, science doesn't always win over this whole global warming thing. Well, 2 people in the world don't believe it, so we don't know it's hard science yet, you know, et cetera. So, facts. Facts sell. Facts, people, no, I'm not saying 100% of the time, of course not, but a larger percent of the time. If you have facts, if you have studies, if you have statistics, and then you put it in an interesting way, it gets your attention. Notice how it gets your attention. Now, I've also said that, you know, why do you have so many different things on your website? You have a page, initially it says, here's what we're about and here's how we help our clients. That's people that, so they understand basically what you do and you're not confusing them. And then we have a page called Who We Work With. and you talk about the problems so they can relate to, yeah, I have those problems. I've gone through those problems. I've struggled with those problems. And then we have a page, how we work, and here's the results you can expect. People want to know what the results are. Here's testimonials and case studies. There's some proof. So here's my background, and you have a nice, powerful bio that shows that, hey, this person is credible and they know how to do it. Now, not everybody is interested in all those aspects, but you can bet people are interested in some of those aspects. So if you leave them out, for instance, I love testimonials. Testimonials, I'm a sucker for testimonials. I go, wow, that sounds great. You know, and I assume they're usually true in the context of a website. You know, I hear read great quotes from people and stuff like that. Who here, when they read a testimonial, they think it's made up or it's lie?
I think it really depends, and I think you can pick up whether it's true or whether it's made up, really depending upon how it's written. And when you think about what the service provider is offering, and you look at the verbiage in the testimonial, you can see that no client would ever use those kinds of words.
Right. And I worked with Sarah Jane on this. She has the double whammy, which you can't always get because you don't have the data, is here's the case study and here's the testimonial tied to it. It's very persuasive. It's like, wow, she really helped that guy and here's what happened and he's really happy, or the manager is really happy and things have changed. And the more detail, the better. See, if you say, Sarah Jane is a really good consultant, I highly recommend her, you're not really saying anything. It's not bad, but it doesn't help you a lot. Okay? So let's have a bit of a conversation about this. What questions do you have about this? And I'm going to have some homework about this. I'll tell you after the conversation.
Can I ask a question about presentations?
Yeah.
In the example that you just gave about what to do and say at the end of a presentation, whenever I give a presentation, there's always an argument as to whether or not I should give out copies of my PowerPoint before the presentation or after the presentation or not at all. And what's your thought about that, and how does that impact or not impact the strategy that you just suggested?
I have sat through, you know, I used to belong to
Toastmasters.
No, I am, sorry, Institute of Management Consultants. And American Society for Training and Development. I belong to a lot of organizations. So I saw a lot of presentations and a hell of a lot of PowerPoints. And I am, I'm a data freak. I love data and I love information. So a lot of times they would hand out, you know, the PowerPoint has a thing, we'll actually print it out, not one per page, but three per page in a place for notes. And so I would furiously write a lot of notes. So I like that, but I don't think it's particularly effective for the presenter. Because, you know, someone said after you write notes, then you have a lot of smart notes, but did you really get the thing? So I've seen people do, almost every word they say is another friggin' PowerPoint. And did you know that? Blah, blah, blah. But, you know, it's overdone. It's called death by PowerPoint. So PowerPoint is losing favor amongst sophisticated speakers. Sophisticated speakers, you know, I'm working with a guy who went through a whole process and training for speaking. And one of the things they say is, memorize your talk and then be able to, I'm not going to point to the evidence, memorize your talk, but then deliver it so it doesn't sound memorized. So that's not an easy thing to do. I have certain sort of parts of my talk that I've done so many times, it's like I'm reading from a script. I can do it over and over and over again, certain talks. I have PowerPoints, but they're few and far between, and I just want to punch up some certain ideas. Sometimes I'll do a presentation with a small group with a flip chart and writing on it, and then I get a lot of interaction. So there's a lot of ways to do that. But remember, the reason you're giving a talk is to get clients. But some people think my reason to give a talk is to give people information. And that's part of the process. I give people information and I entertain them and they have a good time. But if I don't make any call to action, those people will forget the presentation, or they maybe they'll remember it, but nothing will happen. So I follow up with emails. I get them on my email list. You know, my email list has been my most powerful marketing tool. So that, does that answer your question? If you want to do a follow-up question, the white-haired person in the audience may.
No, that's right.
Sarah Jane, one of the things I've found is if you give people the PowerPoint ahead of time, they spend too much time looking at it, where you want them focused more on you.
Yeah.
And what I give afterwards is a subset of my PowerPoint. So it's not the whole thing, but it's enough to give them the highlight points. And my PowerPoints are mostly pictures that just cue me onto what the next part of my talk is. But I will give them a handout that contains key points and my contact info, rather than I don't want them following along. In my trainings, it's the same thing. The handout is different from the PowerPoint.
Yeah, that's what I tend to do. I get complaints no matter what I do, and that was really the thrust behind my question.
Yeah.
I just if it's something where I'm doing a training, I will sometimes send them key points ahead of time so the people who want to reflect on it can. But I tell them the presentation itself won't give you what you need.
Yeah. It'll get you interested. It'll take you to it's the starting point. By the way, you know, the one place to see great presentations, which you have already probably looked at, is I blanked on the name. What's the thing? The short
TED
Talks. Yes, the short presentations. You know, a short presentation of 18 minutes, which is sort of the ideal length, is you had to do a lot of work to make it so concise that you could get across your points powerfully in 18 minutes. And I've seen a lot of really good ones. And the good ones, sometimes they don't use any PowerPoints, and sometimes they do. And when they do, look at how they use them. They never go point by point. Sometimes they put up a quote or they put up a picture or something once in a while. But I don't want to focus on that on presentation so much. It's like the call to action. And the whole point of this is specific information can make a point and can persuade people. So, but what it does relate to is you can use these kind of points in your presentation. And they can be really good openings for a presentation. Or you might start with a story. You know, I was working with a client recently and I found that blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera. And I did some research and I discovered something that really changed the way. Sharon, your picture is... I feel like I'm in a car accident with you right now. Please don't have an accident. Okay, I'm totally distracted here. Now we have the dog. This is a lot of fun, but... Where was I? I lost my attention. So you can take that fact that you've done a little research on, you find out a little more and use that fact. Well, I discovered that a University of California study showed that people don't persist with their marketing because this one thing comes up. And if you could discover that one thing, you could have a breakthrough in your marketing. Would you like to know what that one thing is? And everybody goes, yes, what's that one thing? So you're creating dramatic interest because you've got real proof, and then people are hanging on your every word. That one thing is X, and whatever the heck it is. Now, I'm just making that up, and I don't know what it is, but you get the idea. So using that kind of evidence is very, very powerful. Okay, who else would like to share something? This is all being captured on video, Sharon, so... Let's hear from somebody else.
I've been listening.
Okay, good. I know. Okay, who's someone? Leanne, we haven't heard much from you. Let's hear something from you about this. Ideas, questions, insights, how you could use this, questions.
I mean, the speaking stuff is all, you know, I agree on point. I don't know. You know, the thing that's on my mind is writing a proposal.
Right now is writing a proposal. Well, you can put those kind of facts into a proposal. But what I want you to have to think of in the next couple of weeks, and let me give you the assignment so and you can fit it into this. So I wrote an example that I'm not going to read. I say, you know, here's some reasons to work with me. Using everything you know about your services, your abilities, market data, feedback from clients, convictions about yourself, testimonials, anything and everything that could be used to make a case for your services, write it down. Use complete sentences, not a word or two for each item. For instance, these are some of my own. I've read 300 books on marketing and selling over the years. That shows that I haven't just read a couple books and made this stuff up totally on my own. It's just a fact I throw out sometimes. I could use the fact that I wrote my own book on marketing and sold 9,000 copies and made $600,000 in sales from those books. You know, that's something I'm pretty proud of, but I never thought would ever be possible. Plus another couple million in sales of programs and services that came out of the wake of those manual sales. So that makes people think, okay, he knows what he's doing. He's produced the results himself. I know that 74% of small business owners don't have a marketing plan, and that puts them at a great disadvantage. I developed a step-by-step system for marketing that has worked for thousands of people, my marketing ball model. I've mastered the art of getting my clients unstuck and into action. I'm a catalyst for innovation with my clients, helping them develop their own ideas and taking them to the next level. I had one of the most amazing client conversations, someone not in this group, last week. And he's writing this thing to make a case for his services, which is business software design. They design software for businesses. And he said, well, the main point we want to make is that if companies are behind the curve or not up to date, they're not going to be very successful. I said, that's just not a very powerful concept to me. And so we talked about this, and we ultimately came up with one of his points: innovation needed to be the key concept. And he was sort of dismissing all of my ideas, which he tends to do. Not the easiest client to work with, but it's challenging for me. And I said, well, look at this, you know, and I made an argument for this being this, and it was like the lights went on. He says, oh, God, you've got it. You've nailed it. That's exactly what I need to do. So I'm good at doing that kind of thing with people, having them see a new possibility, blah, blah, blah. Okay. So I want you to write something like that for yourself. It's not like a letter you would give to people, so it's easier than that. You don't have to worry about grammar, sentence structure, or anything. It's just a brain dump of everything you can think of that can give evidence for the benefits of your service, for why your service is good. Now, you should do some research, too. You should do some Google research like I've talked about. You know, why is coaching great? Why is working with horses so powerful? What changes can happen? Experiential learning related to that. You know, you don't have to do deep, deep research yet. You can have just the beginnings of it. You know, we have data on this, this, and this. The thing that I see so much, just coming back to the original concept of this conversation, is people don't make a strong enough case. They just don't. And we wonder why people aren't interested, because we don't make that strong enough case. We hold back. We're shy about it. We don't want to boast. We don't have to boast to make a case. It's not boasting if it's true. You know, we're reluctant to do that in many cases. So we want to get out of that and really look. Now, out of those 30, 40, 50 things you write, you might find a few that are very compelling. And then you can test those out and you can start using them. When someone asks a question, for instance, you have a limited number of questions that people ask. So let's see. Let's get someone I haven't interacted with yet. Udo. So Udo, I know this is kind of technical, but if you're working with a client, are there certain common questions that they always ask you that you can answer? Oh, we can't hear you. Your sound still isn't working, you know. It's not your earpiece, something on your microphone. So sorry about that. Can't hear you, still can't hear you. You're the technical guy. You're supposed to be brilliant at this. So you're unmuted, but somehow it's not working. So I don't know. Sorry about that. So how about Leanne? Back to Leanne. So what are some questions that people ask you? Because often this proof and these points and this making a case is what you use when you're asking questions. So for instance, if I say, well, what will I really get out of your coaching, Leanne? What makes your approach different?
I turn it around and ask them what the most important key result is for them to accomplish over the next 6 months, because I want them to have an experience of it. Some clients come with a list from their organization of questions. How long have you been coaching? What's your approach to coaching? You know, what makes you unique? Do you have a credential? Blah, 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 all those things.
Yeah. Well, how do you answer those?
With the truth.
Okay. So what I'm saying is we want to look deeper and see if we can make more persuasive arguments. Because, you know, the answer to any question you can turn into a persuasive argument, or it could just be an answer. And you can answer it and then turn it back to them. For instance, if you say, you know, it's the question that almost everybody is terrible at, so this is one of the things you want to try to come up with, or one of the supporting things for this. Well, what makes your coaching approach to unique?
That's easy.
What makes it unique?
There are three things that make our approach to coaching unique. Okay. First of all, you graduate from coaching with the skills to continue identifying what's most important and accomplish it over and over again without the support of a coach. That's not the case. I'm teaching you to fish. I'm not giving you the fish. That's what I say.
Okay. Good.
That's a big thing.
So when you're doing the exercise, you'll write that down amongst a lot of things you haven't thought of. So, yeah. So, but don't all coaches do that?
No, not by far. Most coaches want clients for life.
Yeah, so that makes you stand out. So, there... You know, some people say, well, I'm just not getting traction. I'm not getting, you know, interest. People just don't see what it's in for them. So that's what this conversation is for. Well, how do I build a case that is not just off the cuff? Oh, because I'm really a great person. I've worked with a lot of people, and I know you'll succeed with me. I mean, that's not enough for a lot of people. Persuasive arguments. Now, you know, so for you as a coach, you know, your specific approach and what you just talked about, I thought that's pretty persuasive. But you should maybe have more than one. And other, you know, what is it that makes somebody go, yeah, that really makes sense to me. That really makes sense. Now, another piece of this, so I said this a zillion times to people. People said, people keep having this objection. Do you ever have a common objection? Put up your hand if you get a common objection. No? None? So, Nancy, what's a common objection you get? Nancy?
Yeah.
What's a common objection? Nancy is moving around her house with her.
Sorry. What's a common objection?
You got a while ago during this class today.
A common objection I get?
Yeah.
Well, we don't have the money.
Okay, we don't have the money.
We don't have the money in our budget right now.
Okay.
That kind of thing?
Yes. So your job, as part of this assignment, is try to find a way to talk about that where they see that money is maybe not such a big issue. Or it might be certain questions that you ask to get them thinking in a different way.
Right. That's great, because there are ways to do things cheaper.
Yeah, that's one way. Yeah. So you could say, yeah, could we talk about that? You know, I know budgets are budgets. But, you know, what priority is this particular product for the company? Mm-hmm. And how does that fit into the overall plan for the year? I know this company has a lot of products, obviously.
Yeah.
And, you know, you as a product manager, they want more resources, time, effort, advertising, whatever, put into that, and they want good, solid arguments. In a way, what a focus group moderator is making a case for a product as well, right?
Yeah, and as you talk about it, probably even more common for me would be, have you ever worked in this category before? Because I'm trying to stretch into new categories, I have to, and I can. So how do I talk about that? That's a really good one.
Right. Are you going somewhere?
I am. I really have to get to a meeting. So, but I see where it's quarter after, and I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So I'm moving along as we.
I love it.
I'm sorry.
And the phone call, you can't doubt. She puts on a thing. She starts walking out the door. And I think that's a cue to wrap it up. So what I want you to do is to write that page. Now I say at least 3 pages. Don't edit yourself. I'll send this to you as well. As soon as something comes up, write it down. The best ones will come after you don't think you have any more. That's when you're finished with memory and are tapping into creativity or inspiration, or other ideas outside your comfort zone. And then I'd like you to send these to me by Friday the 22nd.
Okay.
We have some time. I want to look at them all. So you might think you don't have a lot, but just dig. What's the proof? What are ideas? How can I build my case? Put down silly things as well. You know, of course they want to work with me because I have white hair and it shows that I'm very experienced. You know, can say because I'm bald and I look cool. I mean, I don't know. Throw in anything and it will end up coming up with some good ideas. Okay, so any last questions about that before we wrap up today?
I like that assignment.
You like it? Oh, good. I'm glad. I was working till midnight on this last night. I was. Okay. Yeah. Building a case. It's really powerful stuff because then you feel, hey, I got something I can communicate that's more powerful, which is the essence of marketing. That's what it's all about. So I'm really excited to see what you come up with. Okay, guys, we'll see y'all in a couple weeks, and we'll see you in person. So have a great couple of weeks. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.